No risk it, no biscuit.
Arizona Cardinals fans, do you see red? Are you part of the Red Sea? Then you are listening to the show for you, a podcast for Cardinals fans, by Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider perspectives. It's time to rise up and see red. Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. I'm your host, Jess Root, from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL wire site, covering the Arizona Cardinals. It's the site I run. My co-host, Seth Cox, as always, is on the line with me. He runs RevengeOfTheBirds.com, SB Nation's NFL site covering the Arizona Cardinals, and also the host of the NFL Draft Breakdown podcast. Seth, you just finished recording a show with College Football's back this week.
Yeah,
doesn't seem real.
Right, we were talking about it. I didn't even know. In July, we looked at the calendar and we're like, all right, we've got all of August. We'll do five shows and you know, do the group of five, the non, you know, big show with the Big 12. And then I went to go look at, you know, who plays first. And I was like, what is this 826 listing of games? And then I thought I was in the wrong year and got all confused. And then I was like, oh my gosh, college football starts a week early this year. So it threw off our scheduling. So we ended up having to kind of cram in the Big 12 and Pac 12 and then the ACC and the non-Power 5 conference. But you know what? It's okay. It's all right. It's over. Well, it'll be over on Thursday. They'll be done with. And we got through, you know, about 70 prospects to know heading into the season. And, you know, as the season goes along, we'll grow that list. But there's, you know, there's going to be a lot of good prospects this year. I'm just not sure any of them are going to be a quarterback. So we'll get to have that discussion again come February to April next year for the Arizona Cardinals.
Well, and of course, when they say that there's a good quarterback class, you never actually know that, because every year they say, oh, there's a great quarterback class. And then it's, we're not here to talk college football. If you want that, go ahead and definitely find the NFL Draft Breakdown podcast that Seth and your brother, that's with Justin, right? Justin was co-hosting with you today.
Yeah, Justin Higdon. So,
but we're here to talk Arizona Cardinals football, as the Cardinals have almost wrapped up training camp. Okay, by the time you guys listen to this show, you will be either the day before or the day on the last day of practice, or maybe even beyond. But the Cardinals are wrapping up training camp, and they are going to play in their fourth preseason game against the Atlanta Falcons. We've got a lot to cover in this show. The Cardinals lose a preseason down to the wire fun game to the Chicago Bears 24-23. So we're going to look back at that game, the good, the positive, the negative, who helped themselves, who hurt themselves. And we've also got quite a bit of news that came out just in the last couple of days we'll discuss, and then look ahead to the game this weekend against the Atlanta Falcons, where the Cardinals are done at home in the preseason. They're not going to be back at University of Phoenix Stadium until the Monday night game against Dallas on September 25th. So we got more than a month before we see them again on our home stadium here. So let's go ahead and get started. We're going to talk about the game on Saturday, 24-23 loss. What did you take away first and foremost in terms of the good?
I think the good was, one, we saw Palmer take a lick and then keep on ticking. I mean, I kind of wrote about it, but and it's not something you want to see in preseason, especially with your entire first team offensive line out there. But he got up and he made throws. And this is something that we've kind of known about Palmer, that he can get a little skittish as he takes those hits. But he really stood in there and made some throws. I thought that was brilliant of him. I thought the young defensive linemen, again, were aggressive and violent, and they clearly are the superior athletic beings, Robert Khimdiche and Olson Pierre, to the starters in Frosty Rucker and Josh Morrow. Rucker didn't play bad, but I thought if you were to ask me to list the like the rankings of who played well, I would say Pierre was the best. Khimdiche was, you know, number two, and then Rucker was number three. So I think the continued growth of that second defensive line unit is important, because we've talked about this. Rucker and Morrow are guys that you want playing 30 to 40% of the snaps, not guys you want taking 60 to 70% of the snaps. So and Pierre kind of step up was important. And I think the last takeaway for me, and something that you can hang your hat on the last 2 weeks, was Brandon Williams. And especially this week, I don't know if it was just because Trubisky is still kind of learning to win from the pocket and other things, but man, he located the ball twice. He drew an offensive pass interference that should have been an interception. Then he should have had another interception. So this was by far the best play we've seen from Brandon Williams in a Cardinals uniform. Granted, it was against third and fourth team wide receivers, but that wasn't happening previously. So we can take that growth as a positive. And I think the biggest thing was clearly that he was able to make plays on the ball. He didn't make any plays on the ball, but he was able to make plays on the ball, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And for me, it didn't look like Brandon Williams out there, because we've talked about this before. Brandon Williams out there at cornerback looked like a guy who was like a super athletic guy who was just playing another position. It never looked natural. And I don't know what happened in the last 2 weeks, because he had some. We saw the roller coaster last year. I mean, he's got the talent that, you know, Steve kind of talks about. He checks off all the boxes in terms of physical attributes, mental attributes, the competitiveness, everything, the movement, the hips, everything, except for the experience. But that game against the Bears, he not only looked like a corner, and this is the first time I think he looks like a cornerback, because the other times he looks like a guy who's trying to play cornerback. He looked like a guy who knew how to play. And not only that, he looked like a good cornerback out there. Now, granted, you know, it wasn't against starters, but at the same time, that was real progress. And you know, if he's turned a corner, then great. Maybe Steve Keim's not crazy after all. Maybe this pick wasn't a reach ultimately, and that he's gonna develop into something special, special enough that, you know, a starter in the league gets. But yeah, it was very, very encouraging to see him not only be run around out there and hip to hip against another receiver, but to look like a guy who knew what he was doing out there. I was really encouraged by that.
And for me, I think the other thing is with that, you know, and you kind of hit on it, and I don't want to take it as far, because it's slightly different in that Hassan Reddick has at least played on the defensive side of the ball in college. But I think you're seeing some similarities with the growth or the stagnation, if you will, of Reddick, the inside linebacker, as that you saw with Brandon Williams. We all got really excited about Brandon Williams last year in camp, especially at the beginning, where it seemed almost on a daily basis, we were getting tweets sent out. Bruce Arians was just praising every little thing he did. And he's going to be competing this year and blah, blah, blah. And then you saw that with Reddick, and then you got to the flash of Reddick, but then you kind of, you know, like fundamental things weren't there. And it was the same thing with Brandon Williams last year, you know, fundamental things weren't there. And then you remembered this guy, Brandon Williams, played 500 college snaps, real time snaps, not practice, not, you know, in the training room, not anything else, 500 real snaps in college at cornerback. He wasn't ready. Like he wasn't and now you see that growth, and like you said, you see technique and fundamentals coming to fruition, and you carry that over. At least for me, you carry that over, and you look at Hassan Reddick and you say, he's already got the flashes. He's already got more flash than Brandon Williams had. But you can see that he's still thinking too much. He's not reacting as an inside linebacker. But if you can kind of project the same type of growth, you have to be excited, because you're talking about two athletic freaks of nature learning how to play positions that they've never played before, and, you know, kind of their growth curve. And as you said, Williams stepping into that is just so great.
And what it does is the worries that you had for the cornerback position suddenly disappear, because now we know what the top four is going to look like. You got Patrick Peterson, you got Justin Bethel, you got Brandon Williams, and you got Tremont Williams. I mean, Justin Bethel has been solid. He's on pace to be the starter. Tremont Williams, even at his age, you know what you're going to get. You're going to get solid play. He may not be great, but if Brandon Williams also can be serviceable out there and not a disaster like sometimes he was, then you've got four capable cornerbacks, and suddenly the position where you're like, wait, who? And you were thinking about Ronald Zamort being aside from the sadness that, you know, he's a young player who's trying to make a roster and he's done for the season, and we're not worrying about, okay, can Eli Buka is it Ronald Zamort, Sojourn Shelton, a bunch of guys who never played anything. Now you have real talent back there, which is, you know, if Justin Bethel gets hurt for a game or two, you don't feel like they're taking that much of a step back on the defense.
No, and that's kind of, and I've kind of, my biggest concern this year, outside of, you know, could they develop a second corner, you know, opposite Patrick Peterson, was if they do develop Justin Bethel, are they going to lose him again? You know, even if he was on par with a Marcus Cooper type, Pro Bowl alternate Marcus Cooper, you know, do you want to lose him or that player again? Because you're probably, I mean, I know that they could have a bunch of money freeing up, and, you know, God forbid both Fitz and Palmer leave, and, you know, you're gonna have to pay somebody, and so maybe you do pay Bethel, but then also you've kind of wasted a third round pick, if we're being completely honest. I mean, at that point you're saying, well, Justin Bethel, a player that we have developed, we're gonna pay him, you know, 4 years, $25 million, and we're gonna let Brandon Williams play out the string here and then move on. So I think that speaks well to 2018, where now all of a sudden you're able to plug in Brandon Williams. You know, you'll still bring in a vet. You'll maybe even bring back a Tremont Williams if he's on this roster for the full year. And you bring back a Tremont Williams as your main backup guy. But then you have 2 years of Brandon Williams, and then, you know, all of a sudden you're able to make some more fundamental decisions in terms of roster building, instead of having to reinvest it big money in a second corner.
Another thing for me that was a good takeaway was, you know, there was a worry early because neither the defense nor the offense initially played well. However, they flipped the switch, and the things that we both talked about wanting to see from the starters, we saw Tyrann Mathieu make a play on the ball, picks off a pass. He looked like Honey Badger. He'd been picking off passes left and right in practice. Now let's see it in a game. He showed in a game. So this is the progress they're making. So not only did he make a play, which gives you the optimism that he's going to be an impact player this year, because let's be honest, last year he not only was not an impact player, he was a liability at times out there. And it looks like he's turned that around. One. Two, we saw the starters making plays. And after Mathieu made the play, then the offense then turned around and put points on the board, and not just points, but scored a touchdown. They got big third down plays. Carson Palmer held the ball too long, as Arian said, but you know, he, even Palmer says he likes to get those hits out of the way. He, because it feels good to get hit and knocked around a little bit in the preseason, because as a quarterback, you don't get touched. And so you kind of get, you get hit once or twice, you realize, oh, okay, yes, this is football, and you've got to get used to being sore again. So the fact that, now granted, some of those concerns that we had in the season last year where they start slowly every single game, and it happened the same thing in the preseason last year, but they turned and they flipped the switch. So they started sluggishly, but they turned it around, which is exactly what you have to do, because you're not going to have, you're not going to be a juggernaut at the start of every game, and things aren't going to go right. Michael Floyd's going to drop a third down pass, and you have to work through that. Not this year, there won't be any Michael Floyd third down passes, but some sort of adversity early on, instead of it letting it derail them, they then made a play and turned it into touchdown. So that was, at least early on, it was a great thing to see.
Yeah, and you know, going back real quick to Badger, that was kind of, that was what you've been waiting for from him. And I think a lot of it was obviously them playing in the Dallas game. I think he had 11 snaps, something like that, in the Oakland game. I mean, there wasn't a chance for him to kind of get into a rhythm and make plays. And then, you know, to see him in his first extended look of the preseason, and, you know, not facing the Cardinals quarterbacks. And we've talked about this a bunch, but most of the time the defensive backs know the routes. They're jumping routes, they're cheating, or they're playing against Trevor Knight. And, you know, they're just able to pick off a lot of passes. So it's just one of those things that when you see it in the game, and yes, Mike Glennon is probably the worst starting quarterback in the NFL, but it still was against.
No, come on. He's the future starting quarterback of the Cardinals, right?
Oh man. And did you see that throw he made into triple coverage off his back foot? Like, there wasn't a soul that could have made that play, and he threw it.
It's ballsy. It's ballsy. Yeah, exactly. And you want that. You want that in your quarterback.
Right. And for a big guy, he sure doesn't throw the ball very hard. But anyways, this isn't about Mike Glennon. But yeah, it was just great to see Badger back and kind of, you know, like you said, shaking off the rust. And then I don't know about you, but, and you were at the game, weren't you?
Yes.
So was the reaction in the press box, I assume, fall down. Just go down. Stop running.
Yes.
Stop running. Like, that's what
we're like, why are you moving around? Why are you moving around? Oh crap, you're gonna get hurt. Oh crap, there's the ball pops out.
Right. Well, at that point I was like, just let it go. Just let somebody else fall on it. Like, here, and you can't do that, because he has to be
that him.
Kind of, right. He has to be that reckless guy. And I know fans don't want to hear this, but that's who he is. He is a reckless, but he's controlled when he's reckless. Like, he does things other players can't do. And it's an instinctual thing. No matter what Madden 18 says, you know, he has the best football instincts in the NFL. It's just a matter of health at this point. And you know, we've talked about Bob Sanders and Tyrann Mathieu quite a bit. That is the comp. That's the career arc. Is this the year we get the Tyrann Mathieu Defensive Player of the Year? Got from Bob Sanders 1 year. So is this the year that we get a full, you know, 16 regular season games? And by the way, the Indianapolis Colts won the Super Bowl that year, if I remember right. So is that what we get this year from Tyrann Mathieu? Is that who he can be this year? To really kind of push the Cardinals back over the top, especially defensively, where we talked about it last week, but they missed that spark that those plays provided. And let's remember, he intercepted that pass and then they went down and scored. The offense at that point had looked atrocious. And so he sparked the only scoring drive for the starters. And it was, in my opinion, an important one, because as you talked about, allowed Palmer to get back in a rhythm, to kind of find his footing, to get hit some more, and still to make some throws.
Any other particular performances from individual players that stood out? For me, I liked the fact, I mean, we're going to continue with the, even though we're going to talk about this later, that Blaine Gabbert is not competing for just backup job. But as we continue with the summer of Blaine Gabbert, because that's kind of what it is, the summer of Blaine Gabbert, is it was great to see him once again. And I noticed that, you know, why he started getting in rhythm early. He came into the game in the second half, and he played well. He was playing behind that second team line that Stanton was, and just like he did against Dallas when he looked really, really good. But even with the third team line in there, then he made plays late. When Chicago scored, and it was the 10-point deficit, I remember posting on the live blog I was doing, this game pretty much is put away, barring some, you know, magic. And the Cardinals got some magic. Blaine Gabbert had the, you know, they had the big plays. He got the field goal. They got the onside kick. He drives them down. It was, if you remember 2015, it was the sort of thing that Carson Palmer did and the offense did down the stretch. When they were making plays late, they knew where they were going to do it. They got the ball. They moved the ball. They put themselves in position. And thank goodness they didn't get the extra point to go for the tie. And ultimately, as a preseason game, you didn't get the 2-point conversion, and they still lose. But there was enough there where you're like, okay. Now, granted, and I've tempered this before, Blaine Gabbert is a 7-year pro, has 40 starts under his belt. No, he hasn't been the greatest one, but one of the worst quarterbacks ever. But he is a top talent in terms of quarterback and arm talent, and he's got lots of experience. He should look like the best person on the best player on the field. And he was, which is exactly what you want to see. So it was just more positives thrown in his direction, you know, kind of stocking up those points, because we're not going to see him again once the regular season starts. He's going to be hidden. He's going to be inactive almost every single game day. And we're not going to hear from him again until next offseason, if they bring him back, assuming that they do. And so this is a great opportunity to kind of stock up a whole bunch of positive juju, so that when it is the great quarterback battle of Drew Stanton and Blaine Gabbert in 2018, the fans are already leaning towards one player.
Yeah, and it was clear that that's who they wanted and that's what they'd want out of it. I thought the thing that impressed me the most, and I've got real concerns with Gabbert in the fact that when he needs to put something on the ball, when he needs to get the ball pushed down the field, it's done with, you know, a very elongated windup. And so I wonder if those windows are going to close a little quicker with the guys that are going to actually be on NFL rosters, as opposed to guys that will be selling insurance in a couple weeks. But I thought the biggest thing was he got absolutely murdered for about the first two series, if I remember all my information correctly. I think, and he got sacked 4 times. And I would say all 4, but 3 of those sacks were clearly line just being terrible, which is another conversation for another show or later in the show. But he did something that Blaine Gabbert hasn't done maybe in his career, but definitely hasn't done consistently in his career, and that's respond with an effective plays down the field. And, you know, it brought the Cardinals to within a 2-point conversion of winning. The real story.
And the play was there. He should have completed it.
Right, and the real story on the 2-point conversion, I'm sure we'll never get whether it was actually Blaine's fault. It was, or not. But it, you know, like you said, he did everything up until that point that you want to see. You know, and then that Blaine Gabbert play came out, and you're like, oh yeah, I forgot it's Blaine Gabbert. But I think the biggest thing is, and I've tweeted this out, I've written this a couple times, a couple days. If you look at Blaine Gabbert through the lens of a late day two, early day three pick from 2016, hell, even 2017. You're really excited about what you see. If you look at Blaine Gabbert from the lens of a seventh-year veteran in the NFL, the mistakes, the throw to Jeremy Ross, those things, you see why he is on his third team and kind of playing for his football playing life at this point. And I think because of the situations he's been in Jacksonville with, you know, maybe one good coordinator and Dirk Cutter, and realistically no good head coaches. And then obviously in San Francisco, and he had a little bit of sustained success over, I think it was 6 or 7 games. I can never remember the correct amount in 2015. Then he beat out Colin Kaepernick, for the starting position. And then he stumbled. And that's the other thing I wonder is when he begins to have expectations, is that when the problems are going to reoccur? Because when he was in San Francisco and he had that stellar 6-7 game stretch, there were no expectations. The expectation was he's not going to be here next year. We're going to release him. Somebody else, he's going to be somebody else's problem. I mean, hell, Jim Tomsula was the coach. Like, nobody cared about the 49ers that year. Like, it was just a year to throw away. And he played well enough that he got the opportunity from Chip Kelly to come back and compete. And then he won. And then you wonder if the expectations of, well, we've seen, you know, bad quarterbacks have success in Chip Kelly's offense. Why aren't you having success? And then it kind of snowballed, and then, you know, everything else happened. And so that's the only, and that's not anything we'll find out until next year when he's competing with Drew Stanton and Blake Bortles for the Cardinals starting quarterback position.
Yeah, I see what you did there. We're going to collect all the Jaguars quarterbacks. That's what we're going to do. We got Byron Leftwich as the coach. We got Blaine Gabbert. We're going to bring in Blake Bortles. Heck. Yeah, let's bring all the Jaguars.
Well, and you know what?
David Garrard? Can we bring in David Garrard?
Right. And I think I really wonder if Leftwich is going to – is the guy they're grooming to be head coach. Because some of the comments BA has made have been really intriguing.
Yes, that's a discussion for I think it's another show. Were there any other positives, any other individual performances? I think you liked what you saw. You mentioned Robert Kendici, Olsen Pierre. You like what you saw from Jeremy Ross personal. You know, he's a guy who's fighting. He's steady enough. But is it going to be enough for the roster? I don't know. A guy that I'd like to see on the roster, but if you look at who else is already kind of locks, is he's going to be a better receiver. This is kind of like the Kerwin Williams situation in a couple of years ago. Jeremy Ross is a better receiver than Britton Golden, but can Jeremy Ross do as many things as Britton Golden? Maybe he can, but Britton Golden's really good on special teams, and he makes plays. So who do you want as your number six receiver? Do you want a better receiver? Okay, a guy who's going to play offense better, or do you want a guy who can contribute on special teams more? I like what Ross did. I just don't know if it's going to be enough. And then, obviously, what you liked seeing was, well, you liked seeing Phil Dawson come into the field for a 52-yarder in the last couple of minutes and not worry. I mean, there was no, oh, he's going to kick this. He's going to make this. And then I realized it was a 52-yarder. I was like, oh, because, yeah. Remember every time we Chet and Kinzaro got on the field last year, like, oh boy. You don't feel that with Phil Dawson. It's so nice. And it's, you know, when he missed the 63-yarder, you're like, ha, 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 what are they doing? That's preseason. And then you're like, oh, stupid. But any other individual performances that fall on the positive side for you?
I thought Hubert played well. Again, are either Hubert or Ross going to overtake Britton Golden? I really don't. I mean, that, And again, we're talking about the sixth receiver at this point too. I mean, they may be fifth receiver on game days when John Brown is hurt or when Chad Williams is not playing, but we're still talking about the sixth receiver and name on this roster. I'm trying to go through my mind here. John Wetzel and Ulrich John continue to ball out. Cole Toner looked good again. That second offensive line has played really well, which is something. I don't know what it is though.
It gives you optimism for when Mike Iupati's hurt, which he already is, and for 2018, honestly, because that's right. Something that you want to look forward to that way. Well, coming up next on Rise of Saber, we're going to talk about the not so pretty things, the things that are concerns, the players who kind of set themselves back a little bit for the roster. That's coming up next on the next segment of Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on Rise Up Sea Red. We've talked about some of the positives already, the things that we're impressed with. Now, let's go to kind of the ugly side. Obviously, if you had number one, remember all those problems with special teams. They all showed up one more time on Saturday, right before halftime, when they drive the ball down the field. They couldn't quite get into good field goal range. So they bring out Phil Dawson, and I know it was just to try it out. Just why not? Can he make it? He missed it. It wasn't even close. Deontay Thompson was like inches from the end line, and he scored a touchdown. It was 109 yards and 2.5 feet. Just insane. You know, Aaron Brewer goes down, misses the tackle. Everyone else on the field seems to forget that, I don't know. It was just one of those stupid, stupid special teams plays that just kind of reared its ugly head. That's not a play that's going to happen next during the season. They're not going to go for a 63-yarder, and that's just not going to happen, especially in that situation.
I was going to say, maybe they would have if they made it, but now they know. They're not.
and you're like, definitely no.
Right, exactly. And now it's like, oh, well, he doesn't have the leg. And not that he doesn't have a great leg, but, you know, 63 yards is NFL record type stuff. So, okay. So he was what, probably 5 to 7 yards short on that. So he's probably in the 56 range. Maybe 58 is going to be pushing it. But now you know. Now you're comfortable with where you're, you know, obviously in a late game situation or, you know, with seconds left, you'll kick a 60, 62, 63-yard field goal. But, you know, just before the half, you know, okay, we really need to get to 56 yards if we want to give, you know, Phil the best chance. I wasn't overly upset with special teams in the fact that a lot of the linebackers that'll be playing specials are playing multiple ways or they're not playing right now because they're injured. The other thing, and I thought the biggest disappointment for me to take away was that your offensive line was getting zero push in the run game. And the Bears didn't even have their best. We're hitting Carson Palmer quite a bit, and Pernell McPhee wasn't playing. Leonard Floyd's not a bad player. The other kid, and his name's escaping me right now, is not a bad kid either. But I thought that was the most disheartening portion of the game. You know, and this isn't a shot at Blaine Gabbert, but you can live with Blaine Gabbert running the third team with, you know, Will Holden, Dorian Johnson, and Tony Bergstrom, and guys that probably aren't going to be on this roster in 2 weeks getting lit up. You're not going to want to see that from DJ Humphries, Mike Iupati, A.Q. Shipley, Evan Bame, and Jared Valdir. And I thought both bookends showed that they're still learning the position.
Yeah, you know, Bruce Arians was quick to say that all he could tell from the sideline was Carson holding on to the ball too long, which maybe, but the fact is that there was a play in particular I remember seeing both Dumfries and Veldier got beat on the edge, and you're like, that's not good. You made the comment on Twitter, didn't you, that Upati looks washed up.
Yeah, he just doesn't look like he has the consistent power that he used to. You know, he's always moved well, especially laterally and in the run game. His strength's never been as a pass protector, but he's always gotten by. But he's been a mauler. He's been a guy that, you know, really pushes the pile in the run game, and he just doesn't look like he has that explosive ness anymore. So
for me, another thing that, well, obviously the negative that players just kind of set themselves back was, you know, without Carlos Dansby out there, when you've got Scooby Wright and Hassan Reddick out there playing inside linebacker, it wasn't pretty. And there are reasons for that. Reddick is new to the position, so he has no instincts there. And with Carlos Dansby, he says, okay, you do this. That makes it easy. Scooby couldn't do that. One, he's not good. And two, he wasn't even playing his regular position. He normally plays Reddick's position when he was on the field. But nonetheless, time to pump the brakes on the, you know, Scooby Wright being your starting inside linebacker. He's a depth guy. He's a guy you'd love to have the back of the roster. He's going to play well on special teams. He can come in a pinch in you know, base formations and get in there and get his face dirty and put a face mask on somebody. He's going to make plays and he's going to be intense. But you see why they needed Carlos Dansby, and you see why Dalen Buchanan is going to jump right back into the starting lineup when he's back, because, you know, that pick for Reddick, at least for inside linebacker, that wasn't meant for this year. That was meant for in a year or two from now, and he'll end up playing more pass rusher, supreme, flexible, whatever position. They're going to have to make up a position for him. It's what they're going to have to call it. But it was a negative in that sense. You saw some things from Reddick, but more than anything, you're like, no, Scooby Wright, you can't be a starting linebacker in the NFL.
No, and that's the thing. It's like, you know, you're working through Reddick's growing pains. With Scooby, he doesn't have the athleticism to win in outside of the box. Inside the box, I don't think he's a bad player. But, you know, you saw on that crossing pattern where the tight end dragged across that he was
just nowhere. He was completely nowhere. Lost.
And you saw any edge runs, he's one of the last guys there. And again, you're just talking about athleticism. Like, their instincts are fine. You have to be able to your instincts are good, but your body has to be able to get you to where your instincts are telling you to go. And sometimes that's just not there. Is, you know, whereas you can see the difference if you watch them play next to each other, and we've seen it plenty. But if you watch them play, there'll be times when Wright is the guy and it's play side on him and he'll read the play correctly. Hassan Reddick doesn't, and Reddick is still there at the same time. And that's just, again, that's just athleticism. It's not a knock on Scooby. He's a good player. He's going to be on this roster probably for years to come as a special teamer and you know, as kind of a fill-in linebacker. But you know, you just if he's your starting inside linebacker right now, I think you're in trouble.
And it showed, just because he didn't get the guys set up. But yeah, other than that, there wasn't a lot for me. There weren't a lot of negatives. Obviously, well, the running game was terrible early. It just really didn't feel like you got anything from the running game at all. And in all except for the spurt there after the interception and with Blaine Gabbert in the game, you get the feeling that it just felt like the starters didn't really want to be out there. They were ready for they're ready for football for real. And after what we saw last year, you're just like, you know, you have to, like the coaches like to say, trust the process. You got to trust the process, and you got to focus on every day. All those cliches that every athlete says, you know, I'm just focused on getting better every day, and I'm going to grind and hit the but they got to do that, because, you know, that sort of lackluster effort carried over into the regular season.
Yeah, and that's the thing is, you would have liked to have seen just a touch more because that was a concern last year. Where, you know, I should have looked it up to make sure, but I think it was game like 7 or 8 before they scored 2 points in the first quarter, and it's just you don't want this to fester like it did last year, and we saw it this week for the first time. Obviously, the starters have only played, I think, what, 4 total series at this point, you know, maybe a quarter's worth of plays, maybe a quarter and a half worth of plays. And they scored 2 touchdowns. So are we really going to complain that much? Maybe not. But again, this was the first time they were going against first team defense, you know, almost an entire first team defense from the opposition. The Bears aren't world beaters on defense, and there
And they
was
looked good. That's the thing.
exactly.
They looked like they were a good defense
And
for a
there were some
portion of that
sh
time.
right, exactly. And like you said, I think the run game and then the edge protection is like that's to me, that's the only two things you take away from this as the negative, because you know Carlos Dansby and Deion Buchanan are your guys at inside linebacker. You might get Hassan Reddick. I'm assuming you're going to get more Josh Bynes at this point than Reddick game one, and then probably game two, and definitely game three and beyond, unless there's some kind of, you know, physical setback from Buchanan. You're going to see, you know, probably a 75% Dansby with a, you know, 90 to 95% Buchanan, and then Bynes and Reddick sprinkled in there to kind of fill in. But I mean, outside of that, you just take away that you're hopeful this is just growing pains for Humphreys and Veldier.
Well, we'll wrap up the negative talk right now. And when we come back on Rise Up Seaward, we're going to talk about some of the issues. That's kind of some of the news that's come out in the last couple of days. So that's coming up next on Rise Up Seaward. We're back on Rise Up Seaward. And so we've moved from the game itself. There's a few things that we want to talk about. Let's make the first one very clear. Drew Stanton is and will be the backup quarterback for 2017. But that's not a surprise for us. Neither one of us believed Blaine Gabbert was actually competing for the number two job. And sort of the reaction from the Red Sea out there seems to be an interesting one. I haven't heard much, but I heard the news when Bruce Arians said it on the radio. And you and I both have been saying this for the whole entire time. Blaine Gabbert said the Cardinals were never, ever, 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 ever going to go with Blaine Gabbert as their backup for a couple of reasons. One, they still think they have a championship run in them. They think they're a competing team, and they know that Carson Palmer can get hurt. They know with Drew Stanton they can win games. They don't know what they have in Blaine Gabbert. And to play Blaine Gabbert as your backup in an emergency situation could not only ruin this year, it could ruin 2018, because as I've mentioned, everything that the team, Harold Goodwin, Michael Bidwill, they're talking about Blaine Gabbert as perhaps a part of the future. You don't go with the 9-31 guy as your backup to it when you have a proven, capable backup winner. And, you know, if he plays poorly again, it ruins his career. It ruins the Cardinal seasons, and then they're back at square one for quarterback for next year. So to me, this was a non-starter. Drew Stanton was always going to be the backup. And the only time Bruce Arians even gave an inkling of it is when one time at the beginning of camp, he said, well, that's what Gabe Gabbert's here for. He's here to compete. But even Arians said back in the offseason, this really was no way that Gabbert was going to surpass Stanton, and especially a guy in Gabbert who keeps having new offensive systems every year. And the comment they say, well, you need to give him stability. Of course, he's going to be here more than 1 year, and he wasn't going to be the backup.
Right, exactly. And that's, you know, that's kind of been the battle cry. Sorry, all this podcasting, I can't talk anymore. That's kind of been the battle cry of this show and our particular, you know, sites, is that you cannot like Stanton and understand that he is the backup for 2017. Gabbert's in here to be evaluated to be the quarterback for 2018 and beyond potentially. Now Carson Palmer comes back, obviously everything changes, but they're not going to go away from Stanton for a guy that's had just a month working in the system. I mean, I know he's been here since May, but a guy that's basically had a month working in the system, a guy that's got in games under his belt in the system. That wasn't going to happen. And I don't know the reason why people thought it would happen. The conversation about salary and that, oh, if you cut Stanton, you save all this money. That's a non-starter. One, they have $13 million in cap space. So who do they need to sign for $13 million? Like, there's not a player out there worth $13
million. They need to sign Blaine Gabbert to that long extension now, essentially.
Right, basically. Like, they can do that. They can give him a three. I mean, legitimately, like, if they saw enough, they could offer him 3 years and, you know, $10 million. 3 years and probably $6 million, if we're being completely honest. But, you know, they could give him long-term backup money, which is like $3 million a year. But people don't understand that. Like, that's the going rate for a qualified backup. Do you know how many passes Chase Daniel has thrown in his life in the NFL? 100. And he's been paid millions of dollars still. And it's not going to change because teams trust him. They trust what he's able to do on the board. They trust what he's able to do in the quarterback room in assisting whoever the starter is. You know, he's an 8-year backup. 8 years, Chase Daniel. And he's thrown, I think it's 74 passes in his career.
Great life.
And he's made $24 million. So, like, are the Cardinals overpaying for Drew Stanton? Probably, but that's what these guys get paid. That's, I mean, Chad Henne, it's the same thing. I mean, career backups that understand the offense, that are strong in the coaching room, and they're invaluable to starting quarterbacks, quarterback coaches, and head coaches, especially if they're, you know, the offensive coordinator like Bruce Arians. So, When you look at it, when it's all said and done, you can dislike it as much as you want, but, you know, 9-year veteran Chad Henne has been with the Jaguars since 2012. He's basically their Drew Stanton, and he's, you know, they've paid him close to just over $23 million, and he'll make another $3.5 million this year. It's the going rate. And here's the other thing, and here's the last thing I'll say about this. Bruce Arians knows what he's going to get when he puts Drew Stanton out there. He's 6-3 as a starter for the Cardinals.
He's second best winning percentage in team history, mind you.
Right, like, consistent numbers. They're not good. They're not good at all. If they were good, they wouldn't have extended 2 years ago. They would have said, oh, we'll give Drew Stanton the job. Especially coming off of the injury and everything, the Cardinals had an out. They could have walked away. They couldn't have, you know, they could have not kicked the can down the road, but they've seen enough for Drew Stanton to know, okay, this is a guy that you want playing 1 to 2, maybe 3 games. This isn't a guy you want playing 16.
Right.
Bruce Arians trust Drew Stanton in that role. He knows what he's getting. We don't know what we're getting out of Blaine Gabbert. We have no idea because he's literally had one period of success in his career over a long stretch. And it wasn't, you know, and it wasn't in a situation that could be the pressure cooker that is Arizona if something were to happen to Palmer for, you know, 2 to 3 games. So they're not going to get rid of Drew Stanton because they know who he is. They know what he's going to do for them. They know he'll keep them in games and that they have a better than, you know, 50% chance to win those games.
Dan Buchanan was taken off of the physically unable to prepare perform list, the PUP. He's back. He's not going to practice yet. The goal is he's going to do walkthroughs this week and practice next week, and then he should be in line to play in week one. This is good news as long as he's ready. And I think the impact will be immense. Now, there are some other players who are now injured. Carlos Dansby's got a leg issue. Mike Iupati has an arm issue. He's going to miss a few days. Kerwin Williams wasn't suited up today on Tuesday. And then the big one is Robert Kimdichie. He left the field on Tuesday, seemingly with a limp in one in his legs. Maybe it's an ankle. Maybe it's a leg. Maybe it's a foot. How bad could that be?
It's devastating. It's devastating because, as I talked about earlier, he's probably been the best defensive lineman they've had in camp and the preseason. But then it's also devastating if it is a high ankle sprain, if it's something that's going to leave him hobbled for, 4 to 6 weeks, because the momentum is kind of dead. And now all of a sudden you're waiting. And maybe they can overcome his absence because he really hasn't been a guy that they had to count on at this point, but you know, to see him play. And so it's a frustrating thing, and it's disheartening, but at the same time, I think you trust that he can come back from this and he can, kind of put it together. Be a guy that is able to, be a contributor for this team.
Then the one other thing I want to talk about before we move on to the Atlanta game would be players helping and hurting themselves. Last week, we kind of put on blast our the two offensive linemen the Cardinals drafted, Will Holden and Dorian Johnson. Dorian Johnson in particular, because he only had four snaps in the second game. He, in fact, when you look at the snap counts, when they brought in Dorian Johnson and Will Holden to play with the rest of the second team line, and they let Bergstrom and Wetzel out early to give them a look with the rest of the second team line. The performance wasn't, the fact that Dorian Johnson was playing, no one talked about him, no one talked about Holden, but it was enough for me at least to say, okay, Johnson, even though Bergstrom has been playing well, that I think Johnson for me now is back on that. Yeah, they're going to be on their roster. Well, Will Holden, that's still, I'm still not convinced, especially with as you noted, both John Wetzel, I think he's a lock, and Ulrich John have been playing really well. And so Holden has to beat out Ulrich John, and I don't think he's done it yet.
Yeah, and I mean, it's going to be disappointing if they cut their fourth and fifth round picks. I think both make it to the practice squad. I kind of talked about it last week, but it was good to see him play this last week. Wetzel's running first team left guard. Well, Toner and Wetzel are rotating at first team left guard with the Mikey Potty. What is it now? Knee injury or was it elbow? I'm not trying to be rude. I just,
your Potty's triceps.
Tricep. Okay. Yeah. So, it's always somewhere on him, and he's banged up. Like, that's just the reality of it. He's been in the NFL for a long time. He's played a very demanding position. He's going to be banged up. Anyways, Toner and Wetzel are rotating in at the left guard, first team left guard position. So those guys are locks. We've known that they're locks since about, the second week of training camp, but those guys are locks. Ulrich John continues to play well. Will Holden's got a battle on his hands. And then the question becomes, do they keep 8 or 9? And if they do keep 9, who's the odd man out there? At this point, I really don't know. I mean, Holden and Johnson both are going to get a chance to be guards. I know they've been playing Holden at left tackle a little bit, but it looks like they're both going to be more guards in the NFL. So who wins that position? Who deserves that opportunity? And who's going to kind of grab it and take it? I think this week will be interesting, but game 5, which is, preseason week 4, is going to be really the telltale of that, because I think that'll be the year extended look. And if Will Holden can't hold up in pass protection again, if he's struggling again, if Dorian Johnson is not a guy that's able to move people in the run game, you know, maybe both get cut. Maybe, you know, one outplays the other and they're able to keep one. It's just, you know, it's going to be a battle at this point.
I agree. I thought Jeremy Ross helped himself. I thought that if you're looking at, you know, a guy I started, got my eye on, was Carlton Agudosi, a guy that the team really likes. He didn't help himself by not playing. But overall, I mean, there wasn't a ton of negatives. There wasn't aside from Scooby with the first team looking out of place, there was really no one who I watched that I can recall now that really hurt themselves. Like I said, they really hurt their chances for the roster, other than guys not playing, because availability is going to be an issue. Aaron Dobson is a guy. It's interesting. You know, if there's a possibility for, say, a J.J. Nelson not making the roster, Aaron Dobson, I think, would be the only guy that would replace Nelson. As Arians talked about, he was getting behind guys, so he's get the speed to do it. But Dobson's just barely practicing, and maybe he'll play this week. There was no one else that said that really hurt themselves, in my opinion, other than Drew Stanton, whose performance was very Drew Stanton-ish in terms of the preseason. Didn't look sharp, only got a few snaps in. But that told me when they did that he was their backup, that they didn't need him to play more to know what they were getting.
Yeah, and, you know, it was a strong – I think you are slightly concerned about the backup running back position. How many teams have two great running backs? That's a fair question to begin with. But
Falcons.
Yeah. But I mean, how many teams have two great running backs when they have a workhorse? I guess we'll see what the Cowboys have, depending on the Zeke suspension. You know, the Steelers did when they had D'Angelo Williams, but I think he's moved on now. You know, but overall, usually there's a clear, you know, downgrade. I mean, unless they drafted Joe Mixon in the second round, I don't think there was going to be anybody that could kind of be David Johnson if anything happened to David Johnson. But I think it's a slight disheartening. But again, I think I wonder how much of that was the offensive line. And Kerwin Williams didn't get any reps at running back, I believe.
No, he did not. He only got his return reps. He did not play at running back. And he wasn't suited up today on Dead Tuesday at practice. And I know he suffered. There was an ankle thing that he dealt with after Oakland. Arian said he just wanted to focus on returns, but it could have been his ankle is bothering him just enough that he didn't want him playing running back. And
Well, and you wonder how much Logan getting injured has to do with that, because they've already lost the guy that was clearly the best option to be a return man on this roster.
Yeah.
And now they may be saying, look, you're going to return the football on kicks and punts, and sorry, buddy, like, that's your job. Like, on one side, especially when for Kerwin, because he's finally going to make a roster coming out. But on the flip side, you know, he, unfortunately for him, he doesn't get to show his ability at running back unless there's another litany of injuries. But I understand the Cardinals' perspective of this, and that, you know, we drafted a guy in the fifth round specifically for his return abilities, and now he's out. You're going to be on the roster specifically for your return abilities. We're not going to take a chance of you getting injured like he did. I get it. I do.
And heading into this final, not the final, but the penultimate preseason game against the Atlanta Falcons, Cardinals starters are going to play. Other than David Johnson, David Johnson's probably going to be in there a few plays. He's had 9 snaps.
And Larry Fitzgerald.
And they won't throw to him either. Like I said, he doesn't need to be tackled. And if we throw to him, they'll probably tackle him, so we probably won't throw to him.
Well, and honestly, why even play those guys? Like, just put them in bubble wrap, sit them on the sideline, and.
Well, I like that, you know, the thing with David Johnson is in 4 snaps against the Raiders, he had 3 carries, and in 5 snaps against the Bears, he had 3 carries. So he is getting his work in, and he's getting tackled. But save those tackles because we know he's going to get the ball a lot. And they're not going to want to take him out much during the regular season. So this is a way to get him work, but not waste those hits. So he's going to get tackled a lot during the year. You can control these right now. So I think it's they're doing it the right way. I like that. But I want to see more of this. I mean, in terms of the offense, ideally John Brown will play, but I'm not sure he's going to. I don't know if there's any individuals I want to see. I just want to see the starters play well. I want to see the starters play well and to respond, and if there's some adversity, to bounce back. I've always got my eye on Justin. I always want to pay attention to Justin Bethel because he's the guy that, you know, could be potentially the weak link in that defense once the season starts. And so that really, in terms of the stars, I want to see. What about you?
Want to see Robert Kambice on the field, but
that too.
Outside of him, I really want to see what Valdir and Humphreys have against a good pass rush in Atlanta. You know, they have Vic Beasley, who's looked great. That's gonna give Valdi some problems on that side. And then Upati's gonna have his work cut out for him with their interior pass rusher and Grady Jarrett. So all of these things are going to get tested. That's going to be, you know, important to see. I think the other thing for me that I'd like to see is the continued usage of Jermaine Gresham and Troy Nicholas, or if Fanny Moma, hell, even Ricky Seals-Jones in the game, he had a 46-yard reception. Just the tight end, the evolution of the tight end usage for theirs in a Cardinals offense. I know a lot of their I know a lot of their hesitation to involve the tight end more had been due to lack of talent. I mean, hell, Jim Dre was one of the statistical tight ends you had under Bruce Arians. But
well, you remember Rob Housler had his best year his first year with the Cardinals,
right? And yeah, and that's the best statistical year from a tight end under Arians with the Cardinals. All that being said, it seems like Gresham – I shouldn't say that. We know Gresham's better than Rob Housler. Troy Nicholas should be better than Rob Housler, you know, and knock on wood, he's remained healthy, and he's caught a pass in every game. So he's taken hits, everything. Is kind of like the undrafted version of Troy Nicholas in that every time he every season he just ends up hurt, and so you never get to really see him perform. So I'd like to see the continued involvement and health of those guys, so we can see kind of the expansion of the offense even more. All of a sudden, instead of, you know, three receivers and then last year, you know, one receiver and a running back, now all of a sudden you might have, you know, two receivers, clearly a running back, and maybe one or two tight ends. And I think that just gives Carson Palmer more toys to play with.
Oh, the other – I didn't bring it up because I forgot. Rodney Gunter, he didn't play at all, a single snap. And he's not been mentioned. He's not been mentioned in the preseason. He's not been mentioned in training camp. What's happened to Rodney Gunter? And I left him off based on the fact he didn't play on Saturday. I left him off my final 53 because I wonder if that's what's happening, because Kambice and Olsen Pierre are getting all the praise. Xavier Williams gets mentioned. Rodney Gunter doesn't get any mention. And so Gunter was supposed to be good. I want to see him play, and I want him to make an impact, because it almost appears that he has flamed out, whether it's weight or something. I don't know. And no one's asking about him either.
Which is unfortunate. And, you know, it's one of those unfortunate things because it's a reach based on the outcome, if that makes sense. And which is why I hate the draft and the term reach and value and all that stuff anyways. Because when he drafted, you know, when Steve Keim picked him in 2014, and then he started as a rookie at nose tackle, or was it, 2015, sorry. And he started as a rookie nose tackle. mean, everybody loved Rodney Gunter. A great pick by Steve Keim, trading up in the fourth round to get a guy out of Division II. Brilliant. Steve Keim's a genius. They cut him before the end of his contract. That's a bad pick, and that was a bad trade, and that was a bad move up. And that's why the draft grades and evaluations and things like that. I mean, you can have one good season and everything looks hunky-dory, and all of a sudden your career is, you know, kind of in the toilet. And that then those picks all of a sudden weren't as good as they were. So, you know, we all thought initially, Rodney Gunter, who's this guy? You know, I email my buddy Emery Hunt, who does a lot of coverage of small school guys, and he goes, hey, he's a good player. He's got a, you know, real good physicality and looked like the type of guy that should be, you know, outperforming all the guys he was playing against, which, you know, then he got here and he performed well, and you saw that. And then, you know, snaps reduced in year two, and you're like, just, you know, it was learning a new position, losing that weight back and getting back to being this, you know, kind of more explosive athlete. And then year three, like you said, we're not hearing about him. We haven't heard anything. Maybe there's a lingering injury, which means he's in Bruce Arians' doghouse anyways. You know, we don't know what it is. Somebody asked.
And so, and that's why I want to see him play, because I want to see him. And one other player that I want to see, because now I've seen enough of Harlan Miller at safety to think, yeah, he could make this roster and be a contributor. Since Rudy Ford's been out, I want to see how he does. I need to see him play, because I think that last roster spot, I think they're going to keep 9 defensive backs, and it's going to come down to Harlan Miller or Rudy Ford or maybe Ironhead Gallen. And I've seen enough of Gallen. I've seen enough of Harlan Miller. I don't know what the Cardinals have in Rudy Ford.
And again, I mean, we're going back. Like, man, it's going to look weird if the back half of that roster, or that back half of that draft is all cut or on IR for this year. I mean, the IR you can't really do anything about, but you know, it's frustrating and it's disappointing. And I don't think all three of those guys get cut, but it'll be something to watch. Yeah, because Ford had some buzz, didn't he? Like people were on the Ford train and thought that he could be a guy that won a position and kind of made the roster and was a special teams contributor, you know, because he had size and speed that, you know, just is uncommon at the position. And now
it's like, but I think that's
injuries will kill you on this team though, man. Like, that's something we've talked about before. Like, you get injured and you're forgotten.
And, you know, if you've got talent on a roster, it's an easy thing to do. But is there anyone else or anything else that you're wanting to watch other than that you're looking for, other than the stuff that we've already mentioned before? We want the starters to play well. We want to see specific players. Is there anything else left to do before we wrap things up tonight, Seth?
No, I'm happy here. I'm excited to watch this final preseason game and then let some guys that will be, you know, doing other things in a couple of weeks play their last NFL game this year in week 5 while you enjoy the ASU opener.
That's right. So that'll wrap up this 163rd show of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. You can find us all over. You can find us on Cards Wire on my site featured there, on revengeofthebirds.com, on Blog Talk Radio, on Audio Boom, on Stitcher Radio, iTunes, on TuneIn Radio, on Facebook at Rise Up Sea Red, on Twitter at Rise Up Sea Red. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. We'll be back again next week. Go Cardinals and Rise Up Sea Red.